This podcast is brought to you by cbj.com/beats. If you need a beat for your next album, mixtape, or demo project, check out cbj.com/beats. That's cbj.com/beats. Warning, this podcast may offend some people unintentionally. So if you get offended easily, you are advised to turn off now. And if you're still here listening, thanks and enjoy the show.
What's up with the world? It's your boy CBJ. I salute you guys. Thank you for checking me out on Sleep Talking and Sleep Vision. I appreciate each and every single one of you guys. It is episode 39, another special episode for you guys. Normally, I know I'd go through my news topics and things like that, but I got another special guest for you. I got over the weekend. I believe episode 40 will get back to the normal program where I'll go over new music, new topics, and things like that. But this week I feel like it was a special episode because of a few different reasons. Right now, if you guys don't know, I don't know if it's still going on, but I know at least over the past week, over the weekend, there was a federal holding prison in New York that for some reason didn't have heat, didn't have electricity going on, like on in there. Some of the officers were saying that it was like 33 degrees in there, and obviously we had this cold front that came through and everybody was freezing at home. So let alone in New York and being in the federal prison without any heat or electricity, it was a problem. So there was a protest going on. I don't know if it's still going on. I haven't really checked it out today. So this podcast was recorded the interview was recorded this past Saturday to you guys, which would have been February the 2nd. For me, today, it's technically Monday, so it is February the 4th, so I haven't checked it out to see what was going on today, but that was going on at the time that I did this podcast, and I just found it very interesting that, I think a lot of people look at prison as everyone that's in prison is in the scum of the earth. A federal holding facility is people still fighting their case. They haven't decided if they're guilty or not guilty, first of all. Second of all, even if they are, we're trying to reform them. At least that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're trying to reform these prisoners, help them to be better citizens, and fix their lives. And I think we have too much of a lock them up and throw away the keys type of mentality for a lot of people that have small fraction, small time problems. I'm not talking about serial killers that are going to be coming out, or I'm not talking about people that are just horrible people. I'm talking about, some people made dumb mistakes, they got caught doing, something stupid. Maybe they got caught on drugs and things like that. Nonetheless, I don't think that this, not having electricity or heat to keep at least a livable standard for these people is too much to ask for. So I found that interesting for them. And my guest, she did the 10-year challenge, and that's how I seen her on LinkedIn. And she had, 11 years ago, she was in prison. 11 years later, now she's like the number one sales marketer or something along that nature. Number one in sales and marketing at her firm. And I just, someone that's gone to prison, I never went to prison, but looking at someone that's gone to prison and changed their life around, I think it is an amazing story and an inspiring story. So I'm hoping to inspire some people by showing this interview, showing the conversation. I kind of jumped around because, how I am. I'm Sleepy J. This is Sleep Talking. We talk about what I want, when I want, how I want. And sometimes it doesn't make sense. Sometimes I'm not necessarily running down a chronological timeline. I'm constantly back and forth in it. So it does get a little bit crazy. And I don't do a whole lot of editing whenever I do interviews or shit, when I do anything. If I'm recording, I don't do a lot of editing whenever it's audio only or visual. It's very minimal editing if I can avoid it. Anyways, so my special guest, her name is Jennifer Rogers or Jenny Rogers. I don't know. I want to naturally call her Jenny Rogers, but I think she goes by Jennifer Rogers, her whole name, whatever. But she has a very inspiring story helping out women change their life, looking at for alternative solutions than to just sending women to prison without giving them a second chance. So I wanted to share that with you guys. Yeah, so hopefully you guys like it. Please, you know, if you're following me on my YouTube channel on Sleep Talking, sorry, if you're following me on Sleep Talk or Sleep Vision YouTube channel, please hit the like, comment, and subscribe buttons. Please, you know, leave me some feedback. Tell me whether you like it, you don't like it. If you want more, please hit the like button so I know you guys are liking it. If you're listening to this podcast on whatever platform, iTunes, Google, or wherever else that you listen to this podcast, please make sure that you guys are hitting the like button, subscribing, and commenting on there. It just helps us out to know that we're doing a good job. And with all that said, I'm going to let you guys enjoy this episode.
Hello.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Did good. I catch you while you're driving?
Yes, but I'm about to pull in. Hang on one second.
All right, no problem. I don't want you to have no accidents while we're doing this.
That's okay. I'm here.
All right. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. So just so you know who I am and what I do, I go by the name Sleepy J. I have a music podcast, typically, is what I talk about, what's going on in the news and things like that. And then I usually do music reviews towards the end. But seeing as how you're a special guest, we're going to kind of go through who you are and what you're all about. So, just so you know, I'm doing a face recording. So it's recording this. I'm also going to rip the audio. It'll be on the podcast so people can stream it or they can watch it on YouTube, whichever one they want to do.
Okay.
So just so we're all caught up, there's no surprises on how it's going.
Okay.
You can introduce yourself to everybody.
Hey, my name is Jennifer Rogers, and I am the founder of National Association of Women's Prison Reform.
And just so anybody that doesn't know, I reached out to her because she is part of this prison reform idea. And I think, I don't really know her story, so I kind of wanted to catch her story. I wanted to, I seen a little video that you did share on LinkedIn that I thought was a pretty cool little video. But I kind of want to dive in a little bit deeper. But before we get into all that, I'm just kind of curious because, I follow the news a lot, see some of the topics. Have you seen this? I guess there's like a protest going on in the federal holding prison in New York. Did you see about that?
I didn't see that.
I was just kind of curious what you thought about it. But apparently they don't have any heat or electricity going on through their federal holding right now, so there's like people gathering outside of it protesting and saying how it's inhumane. I'm just kind of curious, since you, if nobody knows, I don't know how comfortable you are talking about your prison past. Like, is there stuff like that you dealt with whenever you were?
I don't remember if I ever dealt with no heat, but I will say that a lot of the conditions in the different facilities that I went to were very inhumane. You know, the prison and jail systems in general are very overpopulated. Women particularly go through a lot of things, just from a health perspective, that in my opinion are, very inhumane, as you know, in what they provide to women as far as their needs, and the things that they, you know, offer or do not offer at different facilities.
Like the lady garments and things like that.
Yes.
Yeah. I was actually curious. I've had relatives that have been in state and federal prisons. Most of them are all guys that I know of. I don't know if any of my female cousins or any relatives have made it there. But I was just curious, like, when you go to, like, let's say, where are you from? Like, geographically?
I'm from Northwest Georgia.
Georgia? Okay. So, like, say whatever county you were in, like, where do they hold, like, the women versus the guys? Because like I was talking to them and they're like, I don't know where the women are. Like, it's like it's a real small facility, so how do you separate women and men?
So when I was in when I got indicted on my federal charges, the county jail that I was being held in, the men and the women were in the same building, and we were just on different sides of the facility. But in the women's side of the county facility that I was being housed in first, it was so overcrowded that you would have a room that would bunk one or two female inmates, and then they would have another inmate on the floor. In those situations, and in the cells that only were made for one woman, they were putting two women in those cells. So you would have a woman that would have her mattress on the bunk, and then a woman that would have her mattress in the floor. And when I was being housed there, my mattress was in the floor. And, you know, you had the women that were coming in and out. It was very unsanitary in there, and the food was bad. They weren't providing feminine products to the women. You know, they would want you to show proof that you needed them. It was disgusting.
Wow. That sounds horrible. Yeah. I probably jumped all over. I probably should let you tell your story, because I'm asking you all these prison stories. But, you want to tell your story just a little bit, so that way people kind of get an idea of why I keep asking you all these prison stories?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually got addicted to methamphetamines when I was 17 years old. And it kind of came from just years of a dark past. My parents got divorced, and I just went through a lot of emotional turmoil over that situation, and seemed like I was always looking to fill the void in that time in my life, and drugs has ended up being what I turned to.
That outlet for you?
It was an outlet, and you know, I hid it so well that no one ever really knew what I was doing. They knew that I was going through something, but they never had a full understanding or an awareness of how deeply involved I was. And 30 days from my senior graduation, I actually fell asleep at the wheel driving, and I got arrested for methamphetamines for the first time. And I didn't get to graduate. I didn't get to go to my senior prom, and I had a very bright future in my life at that point. But when that happened, it's like I lost everything in that moment. And not long after that, I ended up getting pregnant with my daughter. And after I had her, I ended up going to court on those charges, and they dropped it to possession of drug-related objects, and I pled out first offender. And then they drug tested me on the one time that I had to report, and I failed the drug test, and they revoked my probation, and I did, it was a 2-for-1, 60 days. I did 30 days in a county jail, and after that, I ended up moving to Washington State, and I lived out there for about a year with my daughter's father. We ended up getting married, and my life was good. I was clean for the first time in a long time, but my marriage was miserably failing, and at the root cause of all of it, I was still an addict, and I had never really addressed that within myself. And so I flew home for the first time in a year, and I got high again, and I thought that I was missing out on the world. And I ended up moving back to Georgia, and I was living this double life. I was dating a police officer. I was high Wow. every day, and I had gotten so good at hiding it that no one ever knew. And my parents suspected it after a while, but I was working at a couple of clubs in Atlanta, driving back and forth, and I hated that and kind of what that entailed. And so I ended up selling drugs, and I ended up becoming a drug dealer, and I was selling meth. And I was able to keep up with that lifestyle for a while, and then I ended up getting arrested on like 9 drug felonies, and I didn't Whoa. Even have drugs in the car. And so when I got arrested, the police officer that arrested me, who was friends with the police officer that I used to date, and of course they all knew what was going on by that point, he told the guy that was booking me, make sure that you pull her prior charge, because I don't want her to bat her pretty little blue eyes and get out of this. And so, I knew that I didn't have anything in my car when they arrested me. And I ended up losing temporary custody of my daughter when that happened. And my husband at the time filed for an emergency divorce order and tried to get custody of our daughter. He had never really had a relationship with her, so they denied it. And that case ended up going to court, and it was thrown out because it was an illegal stop, an illegal search, and there was, in fact, no evidence proving that I had drugs.
Right.
So that case got thrown out. And then I ended up losing full custody of my daughter. And once that happened, I just lost myself completely. I mean, I was in a very dark time in my life. I just did not want to live anymore. And I ended up getting indicted by the feds probably about 6 or 7 months later. And once I got indicted by the feds, my parents wouldn't let me come home. By that point, they were just done with the entire situation. And so I sat in two different county facilities for 4 months total. But while I was in there, in the first facility that I was in, there was a woman that came in with the church. She was a volunteer. And I had never talked to her before. She didn't know why I was in there. But she said, "Can I pray for you?" And I said, "Yes." And she looked me directly in my eyes once she was done. And she said, "You will never go back to your addiction again." And in that moment, I knew that I would never go back. It was like I felt like I could breathe again for the first time. And I ended up getting transferred to another federal holding facility in Fort Payne, Alabama. And then my mom ended up bonding me out. And I was out for almost a year. I had turned my life around. But the feds still sentenced me to 2 years. And I was supposed to go to a minimum security camp, and I ended up getting sent to a maximum security facility in SeaTac, Washington. And so I turned myself in, and from the time that I entered in there, I did not see daylight until the time I left. There was no outside yard. I got locked down in solitary confinement for 3 weeks for something that I did not do. And in the conditions of that prison where I was at for the women, there were no access to showers in solitary confinement. So they let you out Monday, Wednesday, Friday for 5 minutes to take a cold shower. And then they locked you back into this closet of a room where they fed you through a hole in the door. And they walked by and stared at you all day long. It was inhumane. And I felt like I would lose my mind in that moment.
Just out of, I'm sorry to cut you off, but you... what's the difference between like a regular cell and then solitary? Like, I know obviously you're by yourself, but like, are the cells even smaller whenever you go into solitary?
So they're very similar. The difference in a regular cell and solitary confinement is the regular cells, they're bunks. So you'll have like a roommate in there and you're in a pod. So you get to come out in the pod, watch TV, move around within your pod. The pods were pretty large.
Right.
So you would be in there, you know, with all of the other women. In solitary confinement, they close you in to a very small, kind of the configuration of a little small walk-in closet, and everything is bolted down, and you don't have access to anything but yourself in that room. And 3 weeks later, and while I was in there, the feds showed up and questioned me. And try to coerce me into admitting to something that I was not involved in. And 3 weeks later, they come back and were like, "You know, you were telling the truth. We're going to let you out. Sorry for the inconvenience." And, you know, they released me back to general population. And I was honestly just so happy to be out of that confinement by that time. I didn't even care. And they ended up denying my halfway house date. I was supposed to get out on December 17th, and they denied my halfway house date, saying that I had strong ties to the community. And I'm like, I don't have strong ties to the community. Like,
I'm trying to go home. Leave me alone.
Like, right, I'm an adult. Like, I have to fend for myself. And so while I was in there on that extra time, there was actually a woman that came into the prison, and she had written a book called The Captivity Series, and her story was very similar to mine. And when I had read that book, it really spoke to the heart of who I was and where I wanted to go in my life. Well, she actually came into the prison, her and her entire team of people. They traveled around. The chaplain had brought her in, not knowing that I had read her book or, you know, how inspired I was by her. And she said to me, she said, "God spoke to me about you. And when you get out, you are never going to come back again. And your life is going to take off. And one day you will get your daughter back. And she will never remember a day that you lost with her." So I actually got released a week later and went to the federal halfway house in Atlanta, Georgia. And 2 weeks later, I was hired by a national advertising company. And my life took off. And I ended up getting custody of my daughter back. And when I was in that interview for that company, they had actually never hired a woman in Atlanta before.
Wow.
And I knew they were going to hire me because I had done a job similar to this job when I was a drug addict and before I started getting in trouble, consistently getting in trouble. And So I just knew that I was going to do very well, and the interview was going great. And I just stopped the guy in the interview, and I was like, I need to be honest with you. Like, I just got out of a maximum security federal prison. I was a drug dealer. I was a drug addict, right. And I'm not that person anymore, and I'm going to make someone a lot of money. And his jaw hit the floor. And I was still in that weird prison phase, right, where I didn't know what to say. And he was like, oh my God, like, I cannot believe it, because I didn't look or sound like I had just come out of prison.
Right.
And they gave me a chance, and I killed it. And 6 months later, working for that company on federal probation, I was traveling the country, opening up offices, training people on how to sell their product over the phone.
Is that what you do?
That is what I do. So I actually left that company. I worked for them for 8 years. And I just decided that I needed to go out, and I needed to figure out who I was outside of that environment.
Right.
And so I actually work currently in the financial industry, which is another like big thing, because it's hard to get as a convicted felon. It's hard to work in the financial industry.
Right.
And one of the co-founders of the company that I'm currently at, in my fourth interview to get hired with them, I wasn't sure how I was going to handle my background up until that moment. And she said, you know, if there's one mistake in your life that you regret, what is it and why? So I just started from the beginning, and I told her my entire story. And she put her paperwork down at the end of the interview, and she's like, I don't have any more questions. When can you start?
Wow.
So I started with that company, and I came in and killed it there also. And I ended up getting promoted twice in like a 7 month time frame with them. And I have been with that company for a little more, maybe about a year and a half now. And I have, for a long time, I knew that I was called to the prison ministry. I just didn't know in what way it would form. And so I just started putting things together, and I brainstormed about it for a long time. And I came up with the National Association of Women's Prison Reform. And once I designed it, I just kind of reached out to a couple of people I knew and told them what I was doing. And the company that I worked for offered to outsource to my organization to give these women jobs, and we're paying a nice, high livable wage, full benefits, 401k, health insurance, and we're paying more than some individuals that have never been to prison. But we believe in second chances, and we believe that these women need a chance, because the prison system is failing women at such a high rate. There are no programs, there are no furthering education programs for women, there are no jobs. And so we're standing in the gap saying, we believe in you, and we're going to give you the opportunity to be a mother, to be a daughter, to be a wife, to be whatever it is you want to be. And we're going to help you be successful, and we're going to show you how to do it.
That's amazing. It's an amazing story. That's actually, like I said, for anybody that doesn't know, this is why I reached out. I seen on LinkedIn you had showed everyone was doing the 10-year challenge, and I'm assuming that's where that post came from.
Yes.
And I seen that you had said from prison to 10 years later, number one salesperson, and I just like, man, that's got to be an amazing story. So that was really the reason why I wanted to have this conversation with you. And again, like, for me, I follow a lot of the prison reform, a lot of the things that are going on right now. You know, with Meek Mill, I don't know if you're familiar with the rapper Meek Mill, but, you know, he's going through his whole, like, I've been on probation for the last 10 years, and I still can't get off of it. And they're, you know, throwing him in jail for popping wheelies and music videos and, you know, just different things like that. And you're just like, he's not harming anybody. He's trying to do his job as an artist, and they're still, you know, being petty and locking him up. And, again, having relatives, you know, I got a brother that was a police officer for 20 years. And then I got like cousins and whoever, you know, been in and out of, you know, jail and prison and things like that. So I always say that I'm a little bit corrupted. And I say that because it's like, I got so many family and friends that have walked the other side of the law and been, you know, it's like, and I don't think they're bad people. They just make bad choices. And a lot of times we're a product of where we come from. You know, we don't have a lot of money, and you see everybody else having all these great things, and you get involved, and maybe, oh, I just sold a little bit of this or did a little bit of that, and, you know, you just find your escapes, you do the things you enjoy. And I'm sure you coming, you know, off of methamphetamines, you've had a lot of probably friends or family members that probably have died from it. And me growing up where I am, actually, I'm in St. Louis, so I don't know if we still are, but I know for a while they said that we were the capital of making meth, that we had to get our own DEA office here because we were making so much meth in St. Louis, at least a few years ago. I don't know if it's still a thing now, but I hear so many people now, like, I've been out of high school for longer than I want to say, but I hear people have died, or I hear someone's, you know, done these things, and I'm just like, man, I don't know. I mean, these were childhood friends. I remember going to elementary school with them or going to middle school with them, and then they, you know, if I do talk to them, I might talk to them today, be like, oh, yeah, I just got out of prison, and then, like, a year later when I try to find out how they're doing, they're dead.
They're back in. They're dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're back in. And I just, like, thank God for whatever happened in my life that changed that course for me. You know, I think it was probably a number of things. I had a brother that wound up going to prison. And then I had started playing football around the same time that he had went. And I think it was a matter of, oh, I started hanging out with the football players. My brother was in prison, was, you know, telling me, you know, don't do that, don't do that. You're going to end up in here with me. And so it was those influences that probably changed that course. But like I said, there's people that I, you know, never moved out of their parents' house, and they're 30 years old or older. And I'm just like, man, I thank God I didn't just, like, stay whatever it was, like, whatever the one incident. Because I think everybody's that one choice, you know, that one time I decided to go to football practice versus hanging out with so-and-so and doing whatever. That was that one decision that made that you know, changed my whole life. So.
And it's very true. I tell people that all the time. We're all one decision away from going to prison. Right. Like, we've all done things that we could have went to prison for. Some of us get caught. Some of us don't get caught. Some people end up dead. Some people don't end up dead. And I have that conversation often because I've had people ask me, well, what makes you different than my son or my daughter that didn't make it out? Like, why are you different? And that's a hard answer to give to someone because I'm not God and I don't know, and maybe you don't believe in God, but I can't tell you that. But everybody's rock bottom is different, and that was my rock bottom, and I came out with such a determination and so on fire to not be that person anymore that I've become very successful as a result of that. And I was able to find what I'm passionate about, find what I'm great at, and what I make money doing, and I was able to align them together to do something great, to give back to other people coming out in my circumstances. And I'm not ignorant to the fact to know that what I look like and how I sound haven't helped me in my life, because I know that it has, but I also know that there's people out there with the same drive and the same desire that maybe didn't come from a good family background, because my family doesn't do drugs and they didn't condone that behavior, and I did have them to rely on when I came home. Well, not everybody has that situation, so I want to be able to say, I was sitting where you are sitting, I have worn the shoes that you're wearing, and I'm going to stand in the gap for you, and I'm going to show you that there is a better way, that you don't have to go back to selling drugs or to robbing people or, you know, prostituting, whatever their thing is, because we all have had a thing that we did to survive. And unfortunately, a lot of the women and men, but a lot of the women that are in prison are there born out of poverty. Right. And so they just wanted to no longer live in poverty. So they did the things that they had to do to survive in their environment. And we put them in prison, but we don't show them how to not go back to that and continue down that same path. And then we send them out with no hope, no direction, no opportunity, can't find a job, can't find a place to live because no one will give them a place to live because they're convicted felons. So what do? They return to the only thing that they know how to be successful at. But if you can use that same drive and that same hustle and take it to something good, think about how much more successful you're going to be. And then it just births this new image of who you are. And if we can just take that and put it in the hands of every single person that walks through our organization and our doors and show them something different, how much better will the world be because of that?
Right. Two thoughts to that. One, you were saying how you don't know why, you know, this person was successful versus that person not being successful. It reminded me of a quote. I don't remember exactly how it went, but it was like, it was a golfing reference. It was like, a quarter inch to the right, you're going to miss it. A quarter inch to the left, you're going to miss it. but a quarter inch to the center, you hit it just right on. And that's essentially how far off everybody is. Either you're too far off right, you're too far off left. But just, you know, a quarter inch just one direction or the other, you hit it just perfect. So that was one thing. The other thing is, I do think that we're creatures of habit. You're stuck doing, you know, I'm familiar with, you know, I sell a little bit of dope, or I'm familiar with, you know, all I got to do is shake my ass a little bit. They're going to give me my money, then I go get my next fix or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Something that I think about a lot, I wonder about, like, schooling. There's a lot of things that I can see going wrong with society, and I think a lot of it has to do with, like, you know, we don't have any vocational skills anymore. I remember, at least when I was in starting school, we had shop for, you know, in middle school. We had home ec in middle school. And then going into high school, you had a little bit of it. By the time I got out of high school, I don't think we had either one of those. Well, I think we still had home ec, but I don't think we had the shops anymore. I think we barely had an art class anymore. So I think we're, you know, we constantly say, oh, the schools are failing, they don't have the money for it, but where's the money going? Like, explain to me why, right. You know, we have money for school, but we're not paying money to teach kids things to help them cope, because not everybody's going to be a bookworm. Not everyone's going to be smart. And, you know, oh, I just love crunchy numbers, or I just love working on a computer. Some people are work with their hands. My brother that was a police officer always tells me, you know, in the animal kingdom, you know, ants all have jobs. Some worker ants, some are, you know, soldiers or whatever the case is. They all have their place, and we don't teach that to our own people. We're like, no, you want a good job, you got to go to college, you got to, you know, get good grades, and, you know, we're focusing on so many of the wrong things. You can see that, like, oh, yeah, if you teach someone how to, you know, build a building, they can still make good money, just like you can if you work in computers or do whatever. So I think we're spending a lot of time and efforts on a lot of the wrong things.
Right.
But with your prison reform, I'm just kind of curious. So are you focusing on reforming the inmates, or are you focusing on reforming the system itself?
So it's a little bit of both. I mean, ultimately, right now where we're at is we're working with women as they transition out of prison. So whether they're in a federal halfway house or a state transitional facility, we're offering them that career path.
Right.
More long-term, what we would like to see happen is we would like to see the program that we've designed implemented before they ever get out.
Right.
Or before they ever go in. So, you know, we see somebody, they're on a path, they're in a courtroom, you know, can they, and don't, instead of sending them to prison, send them to our program. Let us teach them a different way. Because ultimately, you know, you can send somebody away, lock them up in prison, and then they're going to get out, and we're in the same situation then, but worse than we were if we can reach them before they ever go.
Right.
So with where we're at right now, launching it, we are working with women that are coming out. Our hope is to get them, once we get more established, to get to them before they ever go, and offer that. So
have you tried talking to, like, some of the judges or anybody, like, beforehand, like, hey, it's an option. You know, when you're sentencing people, you can send them to us, and we'll work with them and try it, just to try it.
Yes. So we are still very in the very early stages of it,
right.
But that is on our agenda of things that we're going to do. Right now, there's such a need for women, particularly here, well, everywhere, but here in Atlanta, where I'm located at, the women that are in these transitional facilities here, you know, we've been in contact and we've done a lot of volunteering with the chaplains and things of those prisons,
right.
And the only jobs that women are able to get is $7.25 an hour cleaning out dog crates,
right.
And they can't be fired and they can't quit or they risk going back to prison. But yet the men from that same transitional facility are able to go through construction foreman jobs and they're paid
right.
$17 an hour. So it's like we're sending, and these women are the primary caretakers of their children.
Right.
So, you know, there's a woman particularly right now that's about to get out. She's been there for 2 years, and the most amount of money that she's been able to save in 2 years is $2,500, because even though it's a state house facility, she's still having to pay them rent to live
yeah.
there. She's also having to pay for her transportation. So she's about to get out. She never lost custody of her children. She's going to pick three kids up with $2,500. And in her mind, that is the most money that she's ever legally had. So she's thinking, I'm going to go out and I'm going to find a place to live and I'm going to furnish this apartment. I'm going to get my kids back and I'm going to buy them clothes.
Yeah.
Like, that $2,500 is $1,500
is going to go pay for your place. Yeah.
Right. And we're setting them up for failure.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so that's really where we're focused on right now, because there's such a need for it, you know, with that. But yes, we do foresee us expanding this to get to them before they go, get to them in the while they're there, get to them when they're out. Like, we want this to be able to help anybody wherever they're at in that stage. If we can get them before they go, wonderful. But sometimes it takes people going. Sometimes it's not about an opportunity.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize that a lot of former prisoners wind up having to start their own small businesses because nobody's going to give them another chance.
And exactly.
If you're the owner, nobody questions an owner like, hey, what's your past? You know, hey, someone's going to cut my grass and seems like a good enough guy. He, you know, he's got a lawnmower and a whole system, and they just go on about their business that way. I feel like this is an amazing thing that you're doing. I had I remember I was working at this restaurant a while back, and a friend of mine's mom was getting out of jail, and she was like, I really wanted to start a hiring firm is what she was wanting to do, to help people, you know, women that were getting out of prison and help them find jobs, because, like, people don't want to hire, again, an inmate, regardless of whatever the case is. And I think it's an unfortunate thing, because I think when people think of an ex-con or whatever the case is, or, you know, someone that's been in and out of prison, they automatically have this thought of, like, oh, they got all these tattoos, and they're you know, the scum of scum, and whatever the case is. But, you know, someone might have had a simple drug addiction that they just couldn't kick, and then they went to prison, they started getting their life. I mean, because for the most part, you should be clean while you're in prison. Not that I know drugs get in there, but, you know, you have those situations where people come, you know, they come home and everyone just assumes that, you know, oh, they've been to prison. Well, what'd they go to prison for? You know, I do believe in second chances, but I also think of, like, you're not going to trust somebody that's a thief to, you know, run your books for your business. You know, that's probably not the smartest thing to do, but I do think that everyone is deserving of another shot and figuring out their way. So I really do commend you on this. Like, it sounds like it's a hard fight for you, obviously, but I think it's also a really good, inspiring thing. I hope a lot of people are hearing your story and they can, you know, they get inspired by it, because, again, I mean, anybody that can come out and turn their life around, and as you know, you're aware, you have your, you know, some privileges, because, you know, you do have the, you know, white privilege and everything. I don't want to harp on it, but I actually had to, I wrote a letter recently to a judge, and I was telling them that everyone, it was back to what you were saying before, I was telling the judge that everyone has done something questionable by the law. Everybody has done something at some point when you were a kid or you were an adult. It's like, you probably shouldn't have done that, but you made that choice in that time. And because you did, you were either lucky enough to not get in trouble, or you were unfortunately in that, you know, circumstance. And from what I understand, when I did go to that hearing, the judge did say that he read those, you know, letters, and he, you know, there was a lot of good people that were behind the person. And so I do think that if someone does have a supporting friend or relative, you know, those are important too. So you were lucky enough to have someone that was there to support you on your, you know, road back. And I'm sure now they probably weren't necessarily all the way there when you first came home, and now they're, you know, full-hearted rooting for you. So that's great.
Yes.
Let me see if I have... Oh, I wanted to ask you, like, on your story that you did on LinkedIn, you had said something about you were, like, an athlete. Like, do you know at what point you went from being, like, the athlete that you were doing to just turning your life to drugs?
Yeah, so the high school that I grew up in, small town, Northwest Georgia, all of the athletes partied every weekend. That's just what we did.
Yeah.
And we partied with some parents that were involved in the partying. And awesome. So that, you know, and none of the other parents knew, but that's what we were doing on the weekends. And, you know, I think it always starts small. And I wasn't actually introduced to meth there. I actually got in a fight over the summer with a group of other girls that is a it's a long story, but a fight broke out, and I was the minor that was there, so I ended up taking most of the fall for it. And when that happened, the school opted to not let me participate in sports that following year. And so my mom had actually relocated to Rome, Georgia, and I changed schools my junior year. And so when that happened, that is when I no longer was an athlete with that school. I changed schools. I met new people. And I ended up actually getting introduced to drugs by the store manager that managed the store in the mall that I was working at. And she was an older woman in her 40s. And that is who introduced me to it. And that is who I got high with for the first time, with a friend of mine from school. And, you know, and that it just started from there.
That's an unfortunate thing. I think that that actually is part of why a lot of people make their bad choices is, you know, someone that you should be looking up to, a manager that you were, you know, probably, what, 16, 17 years old?
I was 17.
Yeah, and she, you know, she was like, oh, yeah, you know, party a little bit with me. And next thing you know, it actually takes you down a wrong path. So I'm just kind of curious, like, as I heard your story a little bit here and lived some things, so I was just kind of curious, like, like I said, I wonder what transitioned for me for football to keep me out of it versus you were the other way. But you were getting in trouble and it was kind of getting kicked out.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, what it really boils down to is that I had a huge void and I was just looking to fill that void with something. And I had been dealing with that for years and no one really ever knew it. The moment that I started getting high, it was like I had this newfound, like, energy, and I felt like I could conquer the world. And, you know, it always feels like that in the beginning.
Until you get hit.
Until the wheels fall off.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it all started for me. But it was that I was looking to get rid of this constant emptiness that I was carrying. Right. And in the beginning, it filled that for me, and in the middle and the end, it just only caused more emptiness.
I listen to, or I read a lot of self-help books, and I listen to a lot of TED Talks and just different inspiring stories. So this has been a really inspiring story for me. I do find it interesting that it's the old saying, like, everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the mouth. It's easy to get deterred, you know, once you... I was ready to take on the world, and then, you know, it didn't happen the way I wanted it to. My wife, she's always telling, you know, she always wants things when she wants it, but she has a hard time dealing with, like, no, life happens, and then you get your plan to figure out how you're going to deal with it. I'm one of those people, because I do music, I do, you know, I'm an artist, and I host events, and, you know, things are always changing. It's never the same story, you know. Same story is that something's always changing. It's not the same story after that.
I go do
a show, and, you know, I'm supposed to be on it at 7, but for whatever reason, someone's running late, and this isn't going that way, and I don't get on the stage until 10 o'clock. And, like, man, you know, you're changing people out. You're switching this. You're doing that. There's always something that's going to be changed. That's the only thing that's constant is change.
Right.
So I do see that those, like, it's just a matter of how you evolve with it, how you roll with the punches. And, yeah, I think you're doing a great job. I hope that you, I hope you realize that even whenever you're getting knocked down, I think it's all about how you see it, you know, perspective. Like, you know, I'm sure there's going to be times where you get knocked down and you're like, oh, I just don't know if I got it in me to keep going. But, like, look at the progress. Constantly look at how far you've gone. I think that's a great thing. As I told you before, I talk about music, and I'm just kind of curious. I was told it might be a little bit of a stretch. I don't think it is, because me personally, the way I look at music, the reason why I love it is you can hear a song, and that song can, like, take you to a certain time, maybe pinpoint a moment, maybe your first kiss, maybe your first dance, whatever the case may be. Is there a song that you could say that's like, when you hear this song, it just transforms you to a time that you were 10 or whatever the case is?
Well, I grew up listening to country music because I'm from the country. So anytime I hear the old country songs come on the radio, it does take me back to that time in my life. And then, like, I went through this phase where I would, like, this is going to sound crazy, but I went through this phase where I would go to sleep listening to, like, gangster rap music. Okay. I don't know where I even came up with the music from at that time. But, you know, I think that, you know, the old timeless country music from, like, the 80s, early 90s is what I grew up with. Yeah, Garth Brooks, you know, all of them. And so anytime I hear their music, it takes me back to my childhood, which was very, before my parents divorced, it was very innocent. And, you know, it was very sheltered and safe. And so, you know, and then once I went through kind of my drug phase, I was listening to the rap music that mirrored the lifestyle that I was living.
It kind of helped harden you up a little bit to, you know, get you through it.
It does.
Yeah. It's interesting. I went through a breakup, and I used to listen to country music when I was going through the breakup, because listening to pop music or, you know, whatever was popular at that time, rap or whatever, was would remind me of that person. So, yeah. So I started listening to country music to get through that time. And once I got through the time, I was able to go back to new pop and things like that. Because the songs at that time weren't connected to that person. But again, like I said, there are certain songs that I can listen to, an Usher song from the 90s, and it'll remind me of, like, being in middle school and talking to the girls that I was talking to, and it just send me down that memory lane. That's what I think is great about music, is how it touches your mood, and it changes it in so many ways. You can hear one song that puts you in, like, oh, I'm ready to fight somebody, or it can make you, like, I just want to dance, just want to have a good time, or you just want to hang out, go for a ride. And so I think that's an amazing thing.
You know, one of the songs that I, or the artist, band, whatever, that I can always listen to that takes me back to a very, like, fun time or just kind of innocent love time in my life is Savage Gardens. Yeah. Because that was, like, Savage Gardens was big when we were in middle school. Like, I can recall, like, you know, my first real boyfriend, probably in, like, 7th or 8th grade, listening to Savage Gardens. Right. And, like, and, you know, oh, my God, you just thought you were so in love when you heard that song.
Or that damn, like, theme song from Dawson's Creek, when you hear that, you'd be like, oh, my God, it's fucking 1990. Yes,
Dawson's Creek, like, Creed, like, all the old good artists. And, you know, and it's unfortunate because, you know, like, music to me now is not like it was back then.
They've done studies that say, like, you tend to, everybody peaks at between, I think, the ages of 16 to 21. That's about where you find, like, that will always be your strong form of music. Me being the music enthusiast that I am, I listen to a little bit of everything. So I might go through a country phase, I might go through, like, pop rock or whatever it is. And so I'm able to still be, I guess, relevant to what's going on right now. I find that people tend to, this is why I started my podcast, actually, was people don't, they'll be like, oh, I didn't know Nickelback still made music. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, I pay attention to who's releasing music, when it's coming out, who's doing this and who's doing that. Me, I've never escaped that innocence of a kid or whatever. I guess music was an escape for me, to where it's like, it was always there for me, you know, no matter if I was in a bad mood, sad mood, good mood, whatever it was, I could always, like, oh, yeah, that song right there puts me in a great mood. That song right there helps me work out. So because I was always connected to music that way, I never stopped. So I listened to all the same artists, like, that I grew up listening to as a kid, because they're still putting out music that a lot of people are like, oh, I haven't heard them for the last 15 years. Like, yeah, they've got, like, 6 albums out in the last 5 years, you know.
Right.
But that's my connection to music, and that's why I actually why I wanted to do music. It's why I actually started doing my podcast, because I think that it's an amazing thing like that. So, but if you want, you can tell people how to reach you. I don't want to take too much more time. It's almost been an hour now.
Okay, yes. So you can reach me by email. The best email to reach me at is NAWPR, National Association of Women's Prison Reform. So just the letters. 2018@gmail.com.
I'll put it on my YouTube whenever I post this up, so that way if anybody wants to email you, they can do that. If you have any, you have any other comments or anything else you want to ask, if you want to ask me anything?
No, I think just for anybody that's listening or watching, no matter where you're at, whether you've been to prison, whether you haven't been to prison, maybe you're just going through a hard time, just stay the course, because we all have dark moments and we all have things that we're trying to get past and overcome, and hurt and pain that we're trying to deal with. And if you will just look forward and keep moving and race to the finish line every single day, like you are running a race every day. It is not a long marathon. It is a sprint every single day. And if you can take that same energy into everything that you do every day, regardless of where you've been or where you're coming from or where you're at currently, you're going to be successful and you're going to make it out. And there is always light at the end of your darkness.
Well, it's been great talking to you. I hope that we can have other conversations as you, you know, if you have something new come up, you know, you reach out to me. You have my number now. You can text me, let me know, like, hey, I would like to get on there and talk to you about the new things you have going on. I'm more than happy to have that go on.
Yes, I would love that.
It's been, I mean, like I said, you got a really inspiring story. I hope people really do latch on to this and they hear it. I hope that this helps you spread your message. You know, it's a little old podcast, but I got a lot of views so far, and it's growing. It's on an upward swing right now. So I thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday. And
All right.
Bye.
Thanks so much. Bye.
I hope you guys liked that interview. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys are enjoying everything that I'm doing for you guys. Before I get out of here, I want to tell you guys to follow me on my Twitter at SleepyJ. That's SLEEP_E_J. Follow me on my Instagram, SleepyJ. That's SLEEPEJ. All one word on there. Also, if you don't mind, go into the Facebook pages, SleepyJ. That's SLEEP-E-J. Hit a like on there, comment, you know, do something. Let me know that you guys are following. Help me grow out my communities. Go to the Sleep Talking Podcast. If you guys don't realize it, I don't spell sleep talking with the G in the talking. It's just with, you know, we cut the G out. So look up the Sleep Talking Podcast on Facebook. Hit the like button on there. Please comment on anything that I post on there. And as always, I'm sending you away with peace, love, positive light, vibes, thoughts, and prayers. Until next time, I salute you guys, and I appreciate everything you guys do for me. I'll see you guys next time.